marriage between a man and a woman is valid and recognized in California.
We respect the court's decision. And, you know, I think that, you know, this is not over.
Stay straight, black, white. Marriage is a civil right.
I have decided to nominate an inspiring woman who I believe will make a great justice, Judge Sonia Sotomayor.
Mr. President, I greatly appreciate the honor you are giving me.
Of a little girl who's standing on the street corner, and a man walks up to her and says, "Little girl, have you found Jesus?" And she says, "I didn't know he was lost."
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Well, it goes by many names, or perhaps we should say many euphemisms. Dying with dignity, a right to die. Even physician-assisted suicide, although it's a little clearer on what exactly we're talking about here legally and medically, doesn't raise our hackles or our eyebrows that much anymore. We hear it, we say, well, you know, that's just part of the medical parlance, part of the legal parlance of our day. Some have called it one of the building blocks of a culture of death, and there's no doubt about it. When you have states that will allow physicians to prescribe drugs to patients who are not terminally ill so that they can end their own lives or through the assistance of their loved ones in their lives, we've passed a threshold medically and legally. I think anyone will admit that, even the advocates of the so-called right to die, the euthanasia movement. We're going to be talking about that for the first 10 minutes of this hour of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Thursday afternoon, the 28th of May. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. After our conversation with Colleen Carol Campbell about the Right to Die movement, we'll spend the rest of today's program talking about the very first Pentecost with Dr. Peter Scare. Colleen Carol Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. She's a regular guest here. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, Todd.
This is a sad, sad turn of events that we've had in the last 10 years or so, legalized physician-assisted suicide. Do you see here the makings of a perfect storm legally and medically?
Yes, actually, I think that's a great way to put it. We have, of course, a rapidly aging population here in America, combined with birth rates that are barely replacement level. That is, so we're going to have this growing group of older Americans needing more and more health care and fewer young workers and to take care of them and to pay for that health care. We've got an economic recession going on right now, which some people think may turn into a depression. And, of course, we have a health care crisis of lack of coverage for millions of Americans. And the party now in power in Washington, including our current president, appear to favor a government takeover of health care as a solution to that crisis in one form or another. Obviously, there's a debate going on about this, but that's a very real possibility. So we have all of these things combined with, I think, a growing acceptance socially and legally of the idea that my life is something that I should be able to terminate whenever I want to and under the circumstances that I want to, or conversely, I should be able to help my loved one terminate their lives if I think they no longer have high quality of life or if I agree with their own suicidal tendencies. So I think a perfect storm is actually a great way to describe this.
Tell us some of the stories. I mean, when you hear them, it's hard to believe this is taking place in the United States of America, but they are. Tell us a few.
Well, certainly we have physician-assisted suicide is legal now in three states right now. Oregon was the leader in 1997. Washington State, the voters just approved the legalization of this in November. And then just recently, last fall in Montana, a district judge decided that it should be legal in Montana. Right now the state is appealing that decision, but for now, it's also legal in Montana. And in fact, that case is even scarier than the first two because there are really no regulations in place. She basically just declared this a legal right. So there's virtually no way to track how that's being carried out. But in terms of the stories, I mean, we have over 400 people now we know of in Oregon have taken their lives with a doctor's help legally under the law. Most most critics of this law say the number is probably much higher because there's no way to check on whether these suicides are all being reported, but at least 400. In Washington last week, a 66-year-old woman living in low-income housing alone, legally bankrupt cancer patient, was the first to take her life legally in that state. She got the prescription from her doctor, approved by another doctor. She did have a terminal condition, but there again, this is the solution that's being proposed. I think what's even more frightening are the cases where this is starting to impact the way we look at sick people in general and the severely ill and disabled. And probably the best example of that is in Oregon, the case of Barbara Wagner, who was a 64-year-old great-grandmother. She was diagnosed with a recurrence of lung cancer last year. She's a retired bus driver. She couldn't afford the drug that her doctor prescribed. It was $4,000 a month, and it could slow her cancer's growth and give her an extra approximately 6 months to live. To her, that meant a lot. That was very important. She wanted that time with her family, so she asked her state-run health insurance plan for help. And they responded, in Oregon, state officials there sent her a letter saying, we won't pay for the medication to extend your life, but we are willing to foot the drug bill if you'd like to kill yourself. And that's an expenditure for them of roughly $50. So you can see where this is obviously the more cost-efficient measure, to put it crudely. And I don't think this is going to be the first case we see like this. In fact, we hear reports here and there about this, and we see in European countries, particularly where they have socialized medicine and this sort of euthanasia ethic woven into their culture, where this kind of thing is happening more and more, and it's very frightening.
When does it go from being mere acceptance of euthanasia or even thinking of it in terms of a right to die? When does it become the duty to die of the sick, the infirm, the elderly?
I think it's already becoming that. We have a woman in England, a baroness, who was very outspoken pushing embryonic research in Britain and was supposed to be known as sort of a leading ethicist. And she came out a few months ago and said that the demented, in fact, do have a duty to die. She said they're burdens on society and we shouldn't be paying to keep them alive. And now we're talking about demented people. That is, people who often have no underlying physical problem except for Alzheimer's disease in the brain and could live maybe 10, 20 years with that disease. But she's saying they're siphoning off important resources. We shouldn't be paying for them to continue living. So we've got that. We've got doctors in the Netherlands, where the euthanasia has been legal for quite some time now, who recently admitted a couple years ago that they'd been euthanizing disabled infants for years, quite a few of them, and they wanted the explicit legal right to do this, but they were already doing this. And even here in the United States, there's a case that just came up this month in Madison, Wisconsin, where a disability rights group is suing the University of Wisconsin Hospital because doctors there withheld treatment for pneumonia, which, as we know, is a very treatable condition, from two developmentally disabled patients, apparently because they believe the patients had low quality of life. One of those patients died. The other one did not because family members stepped in and said, hey, we want our loved one fed. And the doctor did not want to feed the patient, did not want to give her any medication. So, we're seeing this already. There's a disability rights group in the United States known as Not Dead Yet, and it's a group of disabled Americans who are speaking out at what they see as sort of a trend toward basically eugenics, the sense of purging the population of those who are sick and who are somewhat of a burden or a financial drag on the rest of us. It's a very scary mentality.
Colleen, I've said many times, being on the very trailing edge of the baby boom generation, to my kids, you know, by the time I get to that age, nursing homes are going to be like a resort in Palm Springs. There's so many baby boomers. It is the investment industry of the future, at least for the foreseeable future. But I'm not so sure now, hearing what you've had to say, whether or not the aged baby boomers will be treated so well.
Well, I think that's right. Resources are only going to get scarcer to take care of this huge population that's coming down the pike and is going to need the care. So again, regardless of where you stand on whether, you know, if, even for those who support this so-called right to die, they have to remember they may be asked to check out before they want to. I mean, we have another case in Wisconsin that was equally appalling, I thought, last year when a state appeals court ruled that the wife and adult daughter of a terminally ill man who had made it clear to everyone that he was suicidal. They took him to a cabin, gave him a loaded shotgun, left him alone. He shoots himself to death, and they inherit his $500,000 estate. When the other children, the stepchildren of this woman, appealed, saying, you know, basically she enabled his suicide and shouldn't inherit his money, the court said even if she did enable his suicide, even if she did help him kill himself, she's still welcome to keep his money. So what you've got here is this grisly financial incentive as well. So I think it's all going to combine to be very frightening, and I think baby boomers especially need to be the ones speaking out about this and alert to this and not to get seduced by this right-to-die rhetoric, because, again, the right-to-die can quickly evolve into a duty-to-die, and I don't think anyone wants to see themselves put in that position. But when you're older and you're sickly or disabled and you've got a lot of people making decisions for you who aren't clear on your values or maybe have agendas of their own, it's a very frightening prospect. And having physicians collude in this is even more frightening, which is why these assisted suicide laws are so dangerous.
Colleen Carol Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and you can read her columns under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Colleen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back from this break, it's going to be time to talk about the very first Pentecost in advance of Pentecost Sunday. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Live this Thursday, May the 28th.